A SIBO Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and we are going to be talking about mind power today, paying conscious attention. Yes, I know you'll find my guest fascinating, as I did his material. We're talking with Eldon Taylor. His wonderful book is Choices and Illusions. How did I get where I am, and how do I get where I want to be? Are those questions you ask yourself? Eldon Taylor, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much. It's my pleasure to be here.
Now, Eldon, I want people to know a little bit about you. You've made a lifelong study of the mind of self. You've earned a number of different doctoral degrees in psychology and metaphysics. You're a fellow with the American Psychotherapy Association, and also you're a minister. Now, what I found so fascinating about you is that you're a practicing criminalist. You were one for over 10 years while you were getting your various doctorates, and now you're the president and director of Progressive Awareness Research, Inc., and you've been involved in teaching personal empowerment to people for well over 20 years. Eldon, how in the world did you get involved with being a criminalist and then going for doctorates in psychology and metaphysics?
You know, that's a subject of at least more than of the time that we have. But the long and the short of that one is, you know, I have always wondered why people do what people do. And, you know, as a child, it seemed like I knew things that I wasn't supposed to know, that if I said something about it, I'd get in trouble. Today we'd call that, you know, intuition, premonition. We might even think of it as extrasensory perception.
Mm-hmm.
But I really sought to understand how you could possess information, how you could have knowledge, and for all intent and purposes, not know where the knowledge came from. I can remember walking into a geometry class in high school, sitting down, opening the text, and knowing everything that was in the book, and not knowing how I knew it. I had never studied geometry. There were some terms I wasn't familiar with, but there was no math, nothing in the course itself that I didn't know. So because I've had those kinds of experiences, I guess what I primarily wanted to do was understand how people work. My father was involved in law enforcement, and, you know, as I was finishing my education, I basically found that my background fit very well with interrogation, lie detection, testing, and counterintelligence. And so I just slid into that area. And as we were running lie detection examinations, once again, you know, I think sometimes the real examiner, if you will, or lie detector is the examiner, not the
mm-hmm.
equipment. The equipment's a great piece of biofeedback. But once again, I found myself really interested in why people were doing what they were doing. In the end, the long and the short of it is, I had some personal experiences that led me to want to make some changes in my life, and because at that point I was, I guess the best word for it is I was one egotistical, spoiled, rotten, angry, mean kind of a person, that everything in his life was wrecked and not working, that from the outside looked like he was successful, driving his big cars and having his big offices, and at the same time attending a university and you know, generally
mm-hmm.
carrying near 4.0s. So those things directed me to attempt to use the work that I was doing in a way to assist and help people. And in 1984, we went out to the Utah State Prison and we conducted a couple of studies, and what I found from those studies changed my life, changed the direction of it, and of course, I believe have helped many, many people since then.
Your experience, and I'm quoting directly from your book, you said, it suggests that most fail to recognize their own birthright and find themselves trapped by beliefs that limit their personal possibilities. When you were doing the study in the prison, I would say that probably was a significant demonstration right there because of the mindsets that people have.
You're absolutely right. There's no question about that. For all intent and purposes, you know, Donna, when we went in with the idea that we'll do some sophisticated psychometric testing and we'll find a common denominator and da-da-da-da-da, and then we'll address that. Well, we did all of that testing, but we didn't really find anything that anyone didn't already know. I mean, we had high scores in self-alienation and social alienation, which, you know, translates to, look, low self-esteem, but then with the social alienation, there was a compensatory adjustment. It really went like, I'm not worth anything. Well, then you're worth less. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
But when we sat down with the inmates, we found that for all intent and purposes, they had a life script that they had practiced. And in the book, Choices and Illusions, I talk about these self-representations that we create and how we practice them, and maybe we'll talk about those later. But they had practiced this script. And the script essentially was how they got through their life. In other words, like most people, they had been told things like, you're not any good, you're not old enough, you're stupid, you never amount to anything, et cetera, and so forth. However, what they did with that information was compensate by building up a self-image that was tough enough, strong enough, mean enough, and in kind of, if you will, like you see a lot of young people today with their go-ahead, make-my-day stuff, and I don't get even, I get even, or bumper stickers. What they did is attempt to bulletproof their feelings so that they weren't hurt, and yet at the same time lived under this limitation that had been imposed upon them. And indeed, they truly believed that at a level of their being. When we sat with them, we found that they blamed everything that occurred to them on someone or something.
Mm-hmm.
That was the mechanism that they utilized in order to maintain any kind of self-image. And, you know, we would hear many stories. I mean, some of them were really sad stories, and most of them, however, were just exaggerated stories. But the bottom line was, even with a sad story, there could be two brothers from the same family, same circumstances. One's in the prison, and one is a physician at a teaching hospital in the state. So it was the choice that they made, but they didn't see it as a choice. They saw it as being railroaded in through kind of a lens of, well, what would you do? Ah, but for the grace of God, there go you. That was kind of their way of displacing responsibility. So everything that had happened to them, it happened to them. You know, I tell the story when I'm talking to people, it kind of was like, you know, my daddy was an alcoholic, my mommy was a prostitute, the neighbor boy hung heroin on me when I was 8 years old. What would you do?
Mm-hmm.
It was that kind of story. What we decided we had to do in the prison system in order to change that was undo their ability to blame. In other words, they couldn't be self-responsible if they blamed it. It's not my fault, so-and-so did it.
Mm-hmm.
What would you do? Undoing that ability to blame became our focus point. And what we settled on at the time was revolutionary. I mean, this is 25 years ago. And in a prison system, there were a few people that had their doubts. But what we settled on were three essential phrases. I forgive myself, I forgive all others, I am forgiven. Now, if you think about it, when you practice forgiveness, there's no longer anyone to blame.
Mm-hmm.
And if I can't blame, well, then it's up to me to do something about the circumstances or the situation. It's only when I can displace responsibility through the mechanisms of blame that I lend myself to it, my own shyster, and cheat myself of my potential reality, my potential being. In other words, there are two ways to be tied up in the world. One is somebody can bind me physically, literally. The other one is I can hold on to a belief that limits my possibilities to experience what life has for me. And that belief is just as much a tether. It may as well be a string that I attach to a doorknob and I hang on to. I refuse to let go of or pull hard enough to break. I am just effectively tethered there in that place, and I'm never going to be able to get beyond it.
You have a sentence in your book that I highlighted that I really liked. Self-honesty can be one of the most difficult characteristics and yet the most rewarding a person can ever develop. And I think that just fits so nicely with what you've just expressed. Personal responsibility and personal accountability. I think when we can consciously make that shift and realize if we screwed up, we screwed up. Okay, that's what we did. Now let's move on from here. How can we make it work? But so frequently, it is so easy to fall into a trap where someone says, oh, it's not your fault. You shouldn't blame yourself. You know, this is a prevalent attitude that I have found in so many environments. And sometimes it feels so soothing for about 30 seconds, but you still have to deal with yourself. You still have to have that integrity with yourself. You have so many interesting stories in your book, and I want to cover a number of different points that you've got. You say the world is full of fixers, and the model is all wrong. Why is that the case?
Well, the bottom line to that is, most of our fixers are doing exactly what you just suggested. They are placating our feelings as opposed to teaching us about who we really are. When an individual, you know, and I stop and I think, you know, the great philosopher said, above all else, to thine own self be true. That was a Pythagoras quote. We kind of forget all that. You know, we get started in our lives today, and altogether too many young people are stuck in front of a television set or in a synthetic environment with, you know, daycare personnel, et cetera. And what they first learn to do is to cope with an environment that, for all intent and purposes, teaches them not to be real. It teaches them, well, let's take television a case in point. Here we're going to get an image of what we should look like and how we should dress and the kind of car that we should drive and how we should talk and what is macho or what is feminine and what is, and so on and so forth. Our roles, for all intent and purposes, are going to be these synthetic roles. And they're going to be full of violence and they're going to be full of sexuality in this day and age, you know. We're going to do everything we can to systematically continue to desensitize the threshold of arousal that would appear in the media. And in that process, of course, we're further alienating the images that we're presenting as the stereotypes or the caricature of what we may should be. We're further alienating it from who we really are. Now, human beings basically have four self-representations that we all have and we all develop in our maturation. One you can think of as your actual self. That's who you are. That's all the little secrets that you might know about. Those are the things that you're not going to share. This is how you feel deep down inside. These are your insecurities. These are your strengths. And these are your uncertainties. But understand that even at that, we don't truly know the actual self, because the actual self has an ego. And the ego creates mechanisms to protect us, but in order for those defense mechanisms to work, we can't be aware of them. So So they're kind of hidden from the conscious mind. There's ways to get to them, but they're kind of hidden. And then we have an ideal self, you know. This is the self that, oh gosh, if we'd have just been born a Bill Gates, or, you know, wouldn't it have been wonderful to be a Mother Teresa? And we have an ought self. This is the self that, you know, our parents have told, you know, you ought to do this if you love me. You ought to do this to be a good citizen. You ought to, you know, you ought to vote to exercise your franchise. It's all the oughts. And some of the oughts are good, and some of them are very limiting. And then we have the desired self. You know, it's who we want to be. It's what makes us feel good. It's what makes us happy. And it's what, when we think of ourselves, is how we want others to see us. Now, most people take that desired self as a very young child, and they began fantasizing a script. So, you know, maybe for me it was John Wayne, okay? You know, if the script that you begin to fantasize is one that's full of violence, full of anger, full of dialogue, that is designed to make you tough and so forth, and that's not who you are, as you fantasize it, you will practice it, and pretty quick you'll automatize it, and it will become your belief. You will have lost contact with who you really are. So it's kind of, you know, it's like the choices story. When we get that distant, we're really looking at living under a dome of self-imposed limitations, and we don't realize it. It influences our choices, and we're kind of like going through life with a multiple choice alternative. And we see maybe A, B, and C. That's all there is. But there's really a whole alphabet out there. And I try to give an example of that so everybody can get it. But it's like, you know, walking down the street in a beautiful city, first time in your life. Let's say it's New York City. It's a glorious day, and you're taking in the sights. And from the third floor balcony, a flower pot falls. And that flower pot hits you on the head, further falls to the sidewalk, the charts scatter about, the soil, the plant, of course, are there. You have a bruise on the top of your head. You know that it's a bruise. There's also an abrasion. It stings, and you're going to have a lump, but you're okay. And you know you're okay. But you have also just had a stimulant come into your life, you know? And what are you going to do with it? Now, for most people, you can't answer this because I know you read the book. For most people, Donna, and everywhere I go, I get one of these three answers, the A, B, C multiple choice, you know. Well, I'm going to sue this person. I mean, look, this is an expensive condominium, whiplash. I mean, hey, this could have fallen on a baby, you know. That was just dangerous, okay? Maybe number two is I'm going to get angry, and I'm going to take these broken pieces of pot up to that, and I'm going to do you know what with them. But if you get up there and discover that it's a lineman for the New York Giants, maybe you change your mind. Okay?
Right.
The third one is, you know, I'm just going to be metaphysical. This is not going to ruin my day. I mean, I was having a beautiful day. I'm just going to ignore it. I'm just going to move on down the road. I mean, hey, I'm going to look for the good in it. I mean, after all, maybe it rearranged some neurons and I'm going to have some special enlightenment. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
All of that really comes down to a form of denial. Now, I spoke to a radio host in Detroit not long ago during drive time. He says, I'm going to do number one and number two both. When you ask people for what they would do, they get stuck there. When, indeed, you know, there's so many other things. You could pick up that flower. You could take it to the florist. And you could repot it, take it home, and grow a beautiful plant. You could take it back to the owner, repot it, as a gift of love. You know, gee, this fell off your balcony. You probably should be a little more careful. Fortunately, it didn't fall on a small child. I didn't want to see the plant die. Here it is. Now, of all the options, when you put your head on the pillow at night, which one are you going to feel best about?
Mm-hmm.
And you see, what we've done in our lives is we begin to live, in answer to your question, synthetically. So our objective in life is what? Oh, I'm going to get a bigger house. I want a new car, another swimming pool, you know? When indeed our objective in life should be, I put my head on the pillow at night, I have a warm, fuzzy feeling, life is great, I love life, and life loves me, and it just gets better every day. Now, if that's my objective in life, you know what else happens? And the hard research shows this, you live longer, you are happier, you are healthier, you prosper more. Your relationships are better. And you know you're even liked by everyone.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
That's my point. My point is simply we attempt to live the synthetic life, pretending to be something that we're really not, and in the process helping others be what they're really not, instead of stopping and coming back to who we really are, getting a, if you will, Star Trek Prime Directive in front of me and saying, you know, this is what my life is about. This is who I am, and this is what I want out of life, and this is how I'm going to live to obtain it.
William Arthur is a man that you quote, and I'll read it. Flatter me, and I may not believe you. Criticize me, and I may not like you. Ignore me, and I may not forgive you. Encourage me, and I may not forget you.
That's correct.
Those words, I think, are especially meaningful because I can think of a handful of individuals in my life that I experienced when I was young that set something inside of me in the way of a belief system that was very, very positive, that even today there are voices ring in my ears, my mental ears, reminding me that they saw something that I couldn't see. And they encouraged me. And I really thought that that was a phenomenal quote. You also make a statement that for every unit of positive information we get, you usually get 90 bits or more of negative information. And that is so very, very true. It is a part of a, I don't know if you want to say it's a culture, it's something that has been utilized to the hilt in the movies, and often it is a cover-up for sometimes that message that is subliminal, that's underneath. And you bring in information about physicians, how words count, how our belief systems, because of language, enable us to fail because of how we perceive things. There was a comment that someone made to me the other day, and they said, well, they sort of got miffed with what I said, and I said, but you didn't hear what I said. Well, you said such and such, and I said, but you're not perceiving it in the way that I meant it. You are making an assumption that you have no facts for. Why have you made this assumption? And it made him stop and think, and they were on automatic, as so many of us do. When we hear things, we just shift and click and say that's what it's got to be without really listening. And your statement about words doing more damage to most people in our culture rather than things affecting them, that is absolutely true. I think that has always been the case.
I agree. Sticks and stones will break my bones, but words will slice and dice me. That's
yes.
Where you're reading from, and
that's
that is
exactly
indeed
right.
True. We know through some hard research that you know, there is nothing that is as painful or as enduring as deep emotional damage that can be done from, you know, just language, just words. When, as young people, we are told that we are stupid, we are dumb, we are ugly, we are fat, we believe those things in a rather indiscriminate way, even if we resist them and argue to the alternative. Locked back there, stuck in the unconscious, the subconscious mind, are those phrases, those words, all that negativity. And this may further complicate the matter because, you know, most people believe that they consciously make their own decisions, and indeed, the bevy of research recently shows us the unconscious does all the decision-making and the conscious only makes up the reason for why the decision was made. So resting in our unconscious, are all these beliefs that are perhaps less than what we are. And I believe, based on my own research and the people I've interacted with, almost everyone has, to some extent, those self-imposed limitations. And those beliefs are the beliefs that someone didn't want you to get, or they saw beyond that in you, and they were the ones that were encouraging you. And if every single one of us as human beings were to look at everyone that we interact with, our fellow workers, employees, employers, our banker, the postman, if we were to look on them, as Wayne Dyer says, as a God experiment walking, okay? And we were to treat them with the dignity and the respect that we would someone of that importance, I think, you know, what we would find is our world would completely change. There are lots of people willing to go out into the street and peace march today and protest and hold up signs. And there are lots more pundits willing to get on television and talk about all the terrible woes of our time and our day and our political world and our economics and da-da-da-da-da. But what you don't see is a civil discourse of the kind we're talking about. Very few people are willing to treat other human beings in that special way that you could say is, for all intent and purposes, the way we'd like to be treated ourselves.
Absolutely true.
If we don't, you know, stop and convolute the model, coming back to what you said, just tip it upside down and change the model, we're never going to be able to get these things that all of us say we want. Peace, balance, and harmony. Health, happiness, and joy.
Mm-hmm. And that's where, as individuals, when we consciously make a choice, we empower ourselves, but we do have to pay attention. Eldon, we're almost out of time here. Your book, Choices and Illusions, How Did I Get Where I Am and How Do I Get Where I Want to Be, is delightful. I recommend it highly. What is your website that people can visit to find out more information about your wonderful book?
www.choicesandillusions.com. And if they go there, there is a free forgiveness program they can download on MP3. It's an audio program. It's based on the same work that we did at the Utah State Prison that really made the difference there. And there's also a special offer on the book.
Eldon, we have about 35 seconds here. What thought would you like to leave my listeners with today?
Set a new prime directive in your life. Make that prime directive a matter of, when I put my head on the pillow at night, I want a warm, fuzzy feeling that tells me life is great, there is meaning to my life, and I love living.
Well stated. My guest today has been Eldon Taylor. His excellent publication is Choices and Illusions, and you can go to his website, choicesandillusions.com. You can read up on his research. There's so much there to see. Go ahead, check it out. And, Eldon, it has been a delight having you as a guest. Thank you for being with me today.
Oh, indeed, my pleasure, Donna Sebo. You're a marvelous hostess. I enjoyed it very much.
Thank you very much for the compliment, and you stay well. And send me a copy of your new book, I understand, that you're writing. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. Don't go away now. We're going to be back in just a moment. More good things to share. We'll be right back.
Hello, this is Dr. Richard Petty, the author of Healing, Meaning and Purpose, and creator of the RichardGPettyND.com website. I am thrilled and delighted to tell you that starting February 7th, 2008, at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, I'm going to be joining my friend Donna Sebo on her show on BBSRadio.com. We're going to do this every month, and I can guarantee you that we're going to be sharing new information and new concepts that will astonish and inspire you.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Ged Rose. Buy it today. 800-872-8852.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo, and telephone lines are now open. Give me a buzz if you'd like me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Telephone number is 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Canadians, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Also, we have a direct line of 530-876-3222. If you've not ever called into the show, all you need to do is give me your first name or initial. Then I'll tell you what my mind skills perceive. And after that, you can ask me a question about anything that you like. Don't forget, in just such a short period of time, 2 weeks, the Women's Show is going to be coming up. Yes, this is an event towards the end of March that is absolutely marvelous. I love being a part of this because of all the excitement and the different seminars and the tens of thousands of people that come out. It's just absolutely a marvelous, marvelous experience. Now, when is this occurring and where? It's occurring in the Pacific Northwest, in the city of Seattle, at Quest Convention Center, downtown Seattle, plenty of parking, and it's on the 28th, 29th, and 30th of March, and the hours are 10 to 6, and if you want to find out more about this wonderful event, go to their website, Northwest Women's Show, northwestwomenshow.com, and you'll get all kinds of good information. You'll find out about all the various activities. Teresa Tapp, that you've heard on this show, she's going to be making an appearance there. I'm going to have a booth. My booth number is 406. Just look for the bright yellow banner with red and black lettering that talks about the Donna Sebo Show on bbsradio.com. It's right there along the top of the booth, and we'll be there. I will have an abundance of books that are going to be for sale. Also, I will be doing many consultations for people, so it is a dynamic, dynamic event. And ladies, carpool in with your girlfriends because it is a blast. It is a wonderful way to spend a weekend where you get pampered. You taste all kinds of wonderful products, food products that are there, all kinds of services being offered. It is for the gals 100%. We have well over 40,000 women that come out for this every year, and it just keeps growing and growing. So we invite you. Again, that's the Northwest Women's Show. Go to their website, northwestwomenshow.com. Check out all the information and stop by my booth and say hello because I'd love to meet you. Don't forget, it's 406. I want to thank Thomas for sending a very nice, thoughtful article called Seconds, and that's S-E-C-O-N-D-S. And I thought I would share it with you because after talking to Eldon about choices and illusions, I thought this is a very, very good subject matter to talk about. And this is what it says. Imagine there's a bank that credits your account each morning with $86,400. It carries over no balance from day to day. Every evening, it deletes whatever part of the balance you failed to use during the day. What would you do? Think about that for a minute. What would you do if you had $86,400 that was put into your account every day? Well, you'd draw out all of it, wouldn't you? Because you wouldn't want to not be able to use all of it. Well, Thomas said, each of us has a bank. Its name is time. Every morning, it credits you with 86,400 seconds. Every night, it writes off as lost whatever of this you have failed to invest to good purpose. It carries over no balance. It allows no overdraft. Each day, it opens a new account for you. Each night, it burns the remains of the day. If you fail to use the day's deposits, the loss is yours. There is no going back. There is no drawing against the tomorrow. You must live in the present on today's deposits. Invest it so as to get from it the utmost in health, happiness, and success. The clock is running. Make the most of your day. To realize the value of 1 year, ask a student who failed a grade. To realize the value of 1 month, ask a mother who gave birth to a premature baby. To realize the value of 1 week, ask the editor of a weekly newspaper. To realize the value of 1 hour, ask the lovers who are waiting to meet. To realize the value of 1 minute, ask a person who missed the train. To realize the value of 1 second, ask a person who just avoided an accident. To realize the value of 1 millisecond, ask the person who won a silver medal in the Olympics. Treasure every moment that you have, and treasure it more because you shared it with someone special, special enough to spend your time. And always remember that time waits for no one. Yesterday is history. Tomorrow is a mystery. Today is a gift. That's why it's called the present. Thank you, Thomas. I like that. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like a chat. 877-876-5227. Or Canadians, 888-815-9756. Also, we have a direct line of 530-876-3222. How would you like to live like a millionaire? Yeah, that's a pretty good idea. What do you think? Well, how about realizing you could do it for next to nothing? These are some cheapskate strategies, and I just really got a kick out of them. You can enjoy luxuries in life that you really don't have to spend a fortune for. One of the things you can do is to create a dream vacation. Take the time to find out about some exotic places maybe you've read about, and to just imagine yourself being able to go there. Put it up on a vision board. What is it that you would like to experience? Where would you like to travel to? And maybe you decide you want to do something special. Maybe there is a special travel package that will take you to Greece so you can see the Delphi Oracle or the Parthenon. Or maybe you want to take a trip to New Zealand, Australia, Africa, maybe to an area of the United States you've never seen before. Well, put it down and then look at what it might cost for you to do that particular dream. And you might find that the sum might be really exorbitant. We might find, gee whiz, if I took a trip to China and to other places, a special tour, it's going to cost me $10,000. Well, that seems like an awesome sum, unless you start to break it down. And you could say, I could do that. Maybe it would take me 3 years to save the money, but you could do that. And who knows, maybe you'd find you'd be able to get some tickets. It would not cost you much at all. But the dream vacation, hold the dream in your mind. And you know what? Lots of times we think that art has to be expensive, and it doesn't. You can have some really beautiful art around you. You can have a gorgeous, gorgeous environment, but you don't have to spend millions of dollars. You don't have to have a Renoir, the original. There are so many ways that you can create art and decorate your home. And if you shop around, you can find some maybe some wonderful, wonderful art books that you can clip the pages out. You know, I have a girlfriend, I was talking to her, she said she goes into bookstores where they're selling books for literally pennies, and she looks for recipe books. And she has found a way of decorating with cutting out pages of books. She said, that sounds like sacrilege, but she said, by golly, I've gotten some wonderful recipes, and sometimes I buy a book just because I want a particular recipe. Maybe there's two or three in the whole book, so I cut them out and I save them. But the way you frame things, how you set them up, you could have art all around you. Doesn't have to cost you a fortune. Also, you may find that you can build a nest egg. You can look at saving. What can you do to see that level of financial independence that you want? It's thinking like a millionaire, and you may well have it. There was a teacher that just was saving automatically out of her salary, which was not very high, a little bit of money, and it was consistently, and she did it for years and years and years and didn't even think about it. And one day, her banker, who she knew quite well, said, do you realize how much money you've saved? I don't see many people saving this kind of money. She said, no, it was a few $100,000 that she had accumulated. It had just compounded for her. And she was so thrilled that she went and gave some of the money that she found she had saved. She didn't even miss it. She said, I just did it. And what she did, she created a scholarship for students to be able to go to school. She had not been able to do as much with her own education, and she said, what a wonderful gift. I'm retired now. I don't necessarily need all of this money, and I would like to start something. So she started a scholarship fund for students. And you know what? You can get professionally pampered. You can do all kinds of things if you shop around and you check out what you can do. Never feel that your dreams cannot be attainable. They are attainable. You can feel like a millionaire if you just appreciate the fact that you are living, that you have vision, that you're able to hear, that you have mobility. It's so easy to get into a pity pot, isn't it? Oh, my goodness. And you say, oh, I don't have this. Oh, I don't have that. And the reality is you may have everything absolutely that you need. And if you can just appreciate that, that's a great place to start. Look at what it is that you want to do with your life. Just because someone has $1 million doesn't mean their life is rich. It is up to us as individuals to count our blessings where we are, appreciate the things that we have around us, and then we find our own personal pot of gold is going to expand in wonderful, wonderful ways, because you cannot expand your thinking without expanding your own personal wealth. And I want to share with you, after we come back from break, how a woman learned how to do this. She finally understood what she needed to do to enrich her own life and to make her life not only satisfactory, but fulfilling on many, many levels. So we'll be coming back and talking about a lady by the name of Erin. It took her over 15 years to accomplish this, but when she set her mind to the task, she got it done. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to be taking a break. Oh, by the way, for those of you in the Pacific Northwest, remember, I've got a wonderful class coming up on self-esteem and personal empowerment on April the 19th at the Center for Spiritual Living. And this is a historical building we're going to be holding the class in, and part of the funds are going to be going for the restoration of this wonderful building. And it's at 206 North J Street, downtown Tacoma area. Also, it's $89 for the class. We'll be starting at 10 in the morning. The 19th is a Saturday. 10 in the morning, we'll have a catered lunch. That's right. You're going to be pampered. Going to have a catered lunch. And then afterwards, we're going to have some interaction as well. So it's a wonderful way to start spring, start your life in the direction that you want it to go. Donna Sebo here. Give me a call if you want more information about the class, 800-872-8852. We're taking a break. We're going to be right back.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP. the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, ttap.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's TTAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Hi, Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 877-876-5227. Canadians, 888-815-9756, also 530-876-3222. Do you want a unique idea for something special for Easter? I've got a recipe here for crunchy chocolate nests. They are so cute, and they're easy to make. So after I finish telling you the story about Aaron, I'll give you this recipe if we have the time. I just thought it was so cute. Always we're looking for something. You know, if you're having company over, you want to be able to create something that nobody else has done before. And it's often little things like this that can make the difference. But let me tell you about Aaron. Stress is considered to be one of the major factors in life that contributes to health problems. It can come from, my goodness, a gazillion different directions. And stress is something that's a part of life. I personally don't think stress is all negative. I think it is something that is motivating. You can turn it and use it as leverage in the right way. But sometimes, I know I've got a very, very dear friend who is going through some very, very difficult health moments, and her doctor said, you've got to cut out some of the stress that you're doing. And she said, one of the things that I've learned is that I'm not enjoying my work anymore, and it has created an environment for me that I know that I need to let it go and I need to leave it behind. Well, Erin, for over 15 years, and she's in Peterborough, Ontario, Canada, she said she had been seeing doctors on a regular basis. She was just having one problem right after the other. She would have this awful fatigue. I'm sure they labeled her with chronic fatigue syndrome. She said she had muscle aches. She had all kinds of stuff. And this, she sounded like someone that was 500 years old, but she was only 32, for heaven's sakes. She was determined. She was going to find out what was at the basis of what was wrong. And she found out a point of information related to the fact that if you have chronic stress, that it can lead to elevated levels of the stress hormone cortisol, which has been linked with chronic fatigue, a suppressed immune system, and with sleep disorders. Now, she found this in doing research on the Internet. She was determined she was going to try to find an answer. She found this particular point of information, and she said, the light bulbs went on in my head. She said, goodness gracious. She was the chronic worry wart of her family. And she went to her doctor, and she said, I want you to have my cortisol level checked. And he looked at her like she was nuts. He said, nobody ever gets that checked. She said, I want you to check my cortisol level. They did, and it was 3 times higher than normal. And do you know what the cure was? Letting go of stress. So she started doing some of the things that she loved, which were hiking and dancing. She started giving some time to herself, one, by seeking out a counselor, and two, using meditation and prayer as something that would help to relieve the patterns. She was having to change her patterning of thinking. And within a few weeks, Not only was she sleeping better, her muscle pain was gone. She had been having chronic yeast infections. They disappeared. And she said, it's not all in your head. But one of the things, and it goes back to choices and illusions that we were talking about with Eldon earlier, one of the things that she became aware of is that she had to change certain habit patterns. And that's often tough to do. Because until we recognize where the value is for the change of those patterns, we'll just keep using them. So this is something any of you that may be having some of this stress situation, go have your cortisol checked. And you can talk to your doctor, and if you have irregular sleeping patterns, frequent headaches, mood swings, sometimes pinkish to purple stretch marks that might be somewhere on the body, unexplained weight gain, you know, all kinds of things that can go on. This is for guys or gals, and you just need to be aware of that. That is a good thing to do. And maybe like my friend who has made a decision that she is going to need to change the way she does work and other things, that can make a difference as well. But it takes being alert and being aware. And we've had members of our family that have gone through some extenuating situations, and their stress caused, and it's happened to me, where you just know that things aren't right, and then you wonder why you're not feeling well. So take care of yourself. Stress can be something that can be positive, but if it's not understood in the right way, it can wear you down. Okay, crunchy chocolate nests. This is real simple, so I'll give it to you quickly. You need a cup of milk chocolate chips, or if you're a dark chocolate person like myself, you need a cup of dark chocolate chips. It's about 6 ounces. You're going to need a quarter of a cup of creamy peanut butter, one can of thin chow mein noodles, those fried noodles, yes, one can, and a half a cup of sweetened flaked coconut. You're going to need 8 to 10 drops of liquid green food coloring, and then have your normal jelly beans, marshmallow, chicken eggs, and all that kind of stuff. Now, what you're going to do, you're going to take a jelly roll pan, you line it with wax paper. You want to microwave your chocolate chips on medium-high and 10-second intervals and just stirring it until it's melted. And don't snitch. Now, don't go in there and take a taste at it, because you won't have any left if you do that. So what you want to do is just mix it, and then you want to, as soon as it's all melted, you want to stir in your peanut butter until it's nice and smooth. Then you want to add it to these noodles, the chow mein noodles. Gently stir them. You want to fold them with a spatula until all the noodles are completely coated. And then for each nest that you make, you take 2 tablespoons of the mixture, put them onto the pan, and shape them into little nests. And it can make about 12 of these small nests. Once you do that, then you chill them about 15 minutes, and then you take, in a small bowl, you toss your coconut with your food coloring until it's tinted, and you fill the center of each nest with 2 teaspoons, about, you know, whatever you want to put in there, of the green coconut, and then you can decorate it and fill it with different candies. Isn't that swell? They're just as cute as they can be, and of course, all of those chow mein noodles look like the nest. They have all of these curls and weaves, and oh, it's just great. It's just absolutely adorable. Makes a fun gift, and anybody can eat them. It's absolutely wonderful. Well, my goodness, we're almost out of time. Tomorrow we have a wonderful guest. We're going to be talking with Sarona Muir, and this is her story, her personal story about her research on her father. It's called The Book of Telling, Tracing the Secrets of My Father's Life. He was involved with a secret organization in Israel who was doing research on nuclear work, etc. Fascinating, fascinating story. So we're going to be here with you, same time, same place, and I don't want you to miss any of it. Good stuff. Donna Siebel here. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Appreciate where you are, who you are, and what you're doing. You're making a difference. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Siebel Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Siebel Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.